You know what really makes us mad? Is wasting money on CDs with only one or two good songs.
Yeah. Talk about punk!
What's up, posers? Welcome to Punk Lotto Pod. I'm your co-host, Justin Hensley.
I am your other co-host, Dylan Hensley.
And this is the show where we assign our guests a year, and they choose one punk, hardcore, emo, or punk-adjacent album from that year. No guests this week, so I have been assigned the year this time. And really, I was assigned a year based on what's the year we haven't done in the longest amount of time.
I think you gave me a couple of years that we haven't done in a long time, and I was like, let's do 2014, because no one ever wants to do anything after 2010.
Yeah.
even though it was 8 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been enough time. We could talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll save it. Save it for the later part. Before we get into that, though, head on over to our Patreon, where you have access to all of our weekly bonus audio. For $1, you get to hear all the goofy stuff we put on over there. we do things like chart dives, and we used to call them 5x5s, but now we call them I'm Listenings, where we just talk about the albums we've listened to over the most whatever chunk of time. We do movie reviews. This week, we did a News of the World, where we take a look at a couple like punk-adjacent news stories, and then we just talk about kind of what we've been up to and what we've been watching or checking out that's not music specifically. So we do other things on there too. Like next week we'll be doing a starting five, so that'll be fun. That's where we each pick five records from a year and talk about them, and all sorts of stuff there. Currently, if you join the Patreon for the $1 tier, you are entered into a drawing where the winner will get a free version of our $10 tier. And the $10 tier is that you get to select what album we talk about on the show. Any year? Almost any genre. We have veto power, but we'll probably talk about anything you give us, honestly. We have a few things that we don't really want to specifically talk about, but that's usually because they're bad people.
Yeah.
But so everyone entered currently. If you've signed up for at any point, or if you're already signed up, you are automatically entered. And at the end of June, we will pick a winner. And that is at patreon.com/punklottopod. You also don't have to wait till then. You can just sign up for the $10 tier. And you can sign up once and then drop down to the dollar tier. And you'll get whatever album you want us to talk about. You can follow us on all forms of social media. Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at punklottopod. We have an email address, punklottopod@gmail.com. A voicemail line, which is 202-688-PUNK. And a Substack, which is punklottopod.substack.com. Basically, if you just think of it and search Punk Lotto Pod, you'll probably find it.
Yeah, other than like TikTok or...
Yeah.
If you had searched a few weeks ago, you might have found the bootleg Redbubble.
oh, yeah. I completely forgot about that. There was a... this is weird. So there was a Redbubble that took our logo and was like, you know, Redbubble, you can just put it on whatever you want, basically, is the idea of that. You just upload an image. Someone had just taken our logo and uploaded it and put it up. Dating back to 2019, we had been doing the show for a year, and then it took us 4 years to find it. So,
yeah, I mean, clearly no one was buying it.
I don't know. I doubt anyone was buying it. It had like 1,500 reviews. But they were all seemed like fake generic reviews, too. So I don't...
No, those reviews are... I think all of those reviews are on the specific products that you can print on.
Oh.
So anyone who's ever ordered something printed on that product...
Yeah.
...that was reviewing it. So it was, like, counting all of those. Yeah, I was looking at that, and they were, like... Yeah, it seemed pretty vague.
Yeah.
In general. Because if you had purchased one of those things and gotten it, it would have been super grainy because it would have been 72 DPI picture that somebody yanked off of the internet.
Yeah.
Not printing quality.
Yeah.
That's been like the main reason we haven't printed anything other than buttons.
Yeah. Yeah. And even those are kind of fuzzy too.
Yeah.
If you know how to, is there a way to upscale DPI from to the, what printing quality? Like, is that a thing?
Not really. It usually comes out pretty grainy and fuzzy because it has to, the computer has to guess what to add in for the pixels that it's having to add to the image, basically. Yeah, there's not really a good automated tool for doing it. Someone's going to have to redraw the logo, I think, is what it's going to come down to. We're just going to have to pay someone who can actually just like, which it wouldn't be hard to do if you know how to do that.
Yeah.
I think it could be done. You could just kind of trace over it, but
I think that would honestly even be finding someone just to recreate it as a high quality DPI in like Photoshop or whatever they want to work with would be pretty easy and probably cheaper than just like a wholesale original creative idea. Though at the same time, a really cool original idea would be fun too. I don't know. We'll have to figure out what to do. Once we have like enough to like cover paying someone to make a design on top of like printing the design. So we'll be waiting a while on that, but
yeah, it might take a while.
But that's kind of like, basically that's all the what the Patreon money is being used for. Well, currently the Patreon money is being used to kind of back pay myself for what I've already paid for hosting fees, but it's not much. So, anyway, but yeah, sorry, weird random tangent, but yeah, we got that Redbubble taken down. So we could also just put up shitty quality Redbubble postings ourselves. If you wanted a mouse pad with our logo on it or,
Fuzzy Punglotto Pod logo on a coffee mug, $140 comforter. There were some funny ones.
Yeah, but yeah, all that stuff there. Cool. So, no guests this week. So last time we didn't have a guest, I assigned you the year, and this time it's my turn. And I went back and looked at all the years that we've done and checked the ones that it's been the longest since we've repeated it. There were 2 years that came up. One was 1976, and I was like, we haven't repeated a 76 since 2019.
Because there's like 3 records left to choose from.
Yeah, there really are. They're literally like, we've done most of the interesting ones already. It's like, what's left is like a Blondie record, like an early Blondie record.
Yeah, the first one.
And like a Runaways album. And then it's like Eddie and the Hot Rods.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of bands that we've never listened to, like Chrome or Sparks. Weren't those the other ones?
I think those showed up.
Yeah. So we're just like, yeah, I mean, unless we just have someone who really wants to talk about one of those two records, three records, which I don't think is very likely. Maybe the Runaways, but like, okay, what's the next one we haven't done? And that was 2014. And that also was 2019 when we did that year last. So it's...
What did we talk about?
You know what? I should look that up. Let's see. 2014, I created a database so that I could keep track of everything we've done. So we've done 2 albums. No, we have not. Today is the second album. The first one, last time we did it was the Dikembe and Reviver episode with Paul from Tor Johnson.
Right.
So it was Dikembe's Mediumship and Reviver's Bicker and Breathe. So we haven't done 2014 since then. There are some years we've never done in the 2010s, because those are the years where the show has existed. So, like, we started the show in 2018, so, like, anything after 2018. Though we did do a Cat Bite record one time, but, yeah, anything after 2018 we've not done in regular rotation, just because it's, like, I don't know, I guess we could throw 2018 in there, or 19 in there, but that was really recent, so it's just weird to... pick an album from that year. But
I mean, we're getting far enough out there, I think.
Yeah, maybe
2018 would be interesting.
I'm thinking like
interesting to see what has held up.
Yeah, maybe that'll be the next one we do then, whenever it's a year we haven't repeated so in a while. But yeah, 2014, been a minute. People don't want to talk about the 2010s whenever we have guests on the show. So a lot of times that's left up to you and me to do.
Yeah, everyone wants to do like 80s and 90s.
Yeah. Listener-wise, people also don't want to listen to episodes about stuff from the 2010s. They don't do as well as you'd think, unfortunately. Even if it was like a really big album, it just doesn't like... I don't know. I guess it would depend on the album. We've never done like a huge record from the 2010s. But yeah, they're not needle movers. That's how we'll put it. The 90s tend to be our best performing episodes because that's our age group bracket.
Yeah, only 90s kids will remember.
So yeah, 2014. What's before? Oh, how do I usually always do this? Before we get into the album you did choose, what are some other albums that came out that year that you considered talking about? Oh, well, thank you for asking. you talk for a minute. What came out in 2014?
Ooh, man. I do not like... We're looking at Rate Your Music.
Mm.
That's the chart that we always use, for better or worse. I don't like this top 40. I do remember Christmas Island by AJJ. That being kind of a record that I enjoyed, but it had things that I didn't like about it. And it's definitely one that I have not gone back to in recent years.
That was on my list of options for a minute. But I was like, man, if we were going to do an AJJ record on the show for the first time, I wouldn't want it to be this one.
Yeah, no way.
Because I think, is it my least favorite AJJ record? I don't know.
I mean, depends on how you feel about Candy Cigarettes.
Oh, I think Candy Cigarettes just didn't age well.
Yeah.
But I like it more. I probably wouldn't pick it either. Yeah, Christmas Island has what? Temple Grandin, Do Re and Me. Coca Play Face Tattoo is pretty good. Linda Ronstadt's pretty good. I don't know. That's the thing is
the good songs from that record, I have seen them play every single time I've seen them since that record came out.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit tired of those songs, even the best songs on that record.
Yeah. Because I think I like The Bible Too a little better than Christmas Island. Junkie Church is pretty strong. No More Shame, No More Fear is really strong. Goodbye. Yeah, I do like Bible Too better than Christmas Island. That's funny. Looking at the songs, I'm like, yep, these are better. Unfortunately, the last record's not going to... Even though it's probably the best record, like Good Luck Everybody is probably the best AJJ record since Knife Man. It's so 2020 specific. Well, so 2019 specific that it's like, it's the protest record. So like, it didn't age. It automatically, like in 2020, it was already out of date.
Yeah.
Because something worse came along. But yeah, I don't know. I don't go to those albums ever.
I'm looking at records that I have actually rated on Rate Your Music. So there's a lot of stuff that I rated on Rate Your Music, like probably back then.
Yeah.
That are records I have not listened to probably since 2015. One I do really love, and we had Sharky on the show just recently, but Dark Blue put out Pure Reality. That would be on my list.
Yeah.
If I were picking.
It was on my list of options as well. The reason why I didn't pick it is because we've done the Puerto Rico Flowers album before, and did we talk about... No, because that would have been after the show started. So we talked about the 29th Victories Rated on our best of for that year. And then we just talked to John, so I was like, I'll do something different. A little different. But that record is amazing. I love that record. That's the first one, right?
Yeah. I think that's probably actually the best record from 2014. I would, I'd put money on that.
Hot take, maybe? I don't know. I had a lot of good options.
I'm looking. Beauty and Ruin by Bob Mould. It's a really good one, for sure. But there's like that, I don't know, that Braid record that came out that year. Did you care about that one? I didn't.
No, I did not care about that Braid record.
Easy Pain by Young Widows. I remember liking that one when it came out after being kind of disappointed in the record before that one. Which I've come around on that one too. I actually revisited that one this year. Kind of got it a little better, but
I'm trying to pull up the stuff that I rated. Is there a way to search?
You can do it. If you go to make your own chart, you can select as rated by others and then put in your username.
Gotcha.
That's usually how I look for my stuff.
Weirdly, on your phone, I think you can actually search your ratings on your page, but you can't on the computer version.
Hmm.
Very dumb. Very dumb. My ratings. So a lot of these I would consider my list of options, like stuff that I was like considering selecting to talk about. Yeah, a lot of these were that. So I sent you a few of my options, and the big ones were, let's see, I had reasons for like specifically thinking about talking about them. I considered the White Lung record that came out that year, Deep Fantasy. I've listened to that one before. I really liked it. I revisited it a little bit before today's recording, and I was like, this is a really good record. It might be their best. I don't know for sure. I haven't listened to every single thing they put out, but I also didn't know enough about them yet. So it might have been interesting to do because I didn't know that much about them, but I'm just kind of dipping my toe into them as far as bands that, you know, for discovering how much I like them and their music. So I considered that one. I considered Code Orange's I Am King just for the pure, what is this shit? I want, yeah, like the laughability, I think.
Yeah, I remember listening to that record when it came out.
So like, I would have picked them because I was like, it'd be funny to talk about this record because they've become wrestling music.
Like, yeah,
literally, they have become wrestling music.
Well, and this record was dipping their toes into that water.
That's dipping the toes. And I think the 2017 or the 2020 album, Forever and Underneath, those probably would have been more fun to listen to and laugh about. This one is just them like starting to do it, but I think those other ones would be funnier to talk about. So that's kind of why I passed on that one.
There's interesting stuff. There's a Soul Glow record.
Yeah, it's 2014. Like super early though.
Yeah.
And I don't know that one very well. I don't think they had quite found their sound yet. A couple things I was looking at, though. So, like, Crowbait put out Sliding Through the Halls of Fate, which probably one of our favorite albums of the entire decade, right?
Yeah, that's definitely a really good one. That's a good contender with that Dark Blue record for the top slot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I strongly considered that one, but then I also was like, I don't know, I feel like we talked about that in the 100 and 100.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about today's record.
I'm sure we talked about it in the decade recap as well.
Yeah. I also thought about Bear Trade's Blood and Sand. I love that album. British, Northern England, British punk band. Very inspired by Leatherface and Broccoli. But also with like a little bit of that Iron Sheik tinge to it. Love that album. Probably also one of my favorite albums of the decade. I thought about The Weeks, The World is a Terrible Place, and I Hate Myself and Want to Die, because that was my introduction to them, but it's like six songs, and so I didn't know if we would be able to really go too far on it. I don't know. I think the full lengths would have more to say.
That's weird. That Weeks EP came out in 2014. It's so weird looking at this chart, because I'm looking at, like, I'm seeing records that I remember listening to while I was working at Wells Fargo. So like that, like the Code Orange record, and like there's a Yacha record that I'm like, that I, and that Austerity Program record. I remember mm-hmm. listening to a lot of really heavy stuff when I worked at that job. But that Weeks record, it's really funny because I remember that coming out and getting really into it. And I lived in a different part of North Carolina when that came out. So it's like seeing like that major where things land on either side of a major move in my life represented in this chart. It's really interesting. kind of hinting at why I think people don't like to pick stuff from the 2010s. Cause it's recent enough that you're like, I said at the top, like, oh, it was 8 years ago, we can talk about it. But like, oh no, that's actually really, that feels very recent.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to think about the fact that it was actually as long ago as it was.
Yeah. I thought about that Level Up record, Hoodwinked, because everybody we knew was in love with that record. It's a great record. Like, I really loved it too. But it was also very funny because we were like, we've been talking about this band for a while now. Or at least I have. Like, I've been talking about Level Up for a while. Everyone discovered them on Hoodwinked, loved that record, and then didn't care about the one that came out after either. It's like one of those records that everybody decided they all, one of those bands that everybody decided they only like one record from, like in the moment.
Everyone loved it.
Yeah. Like people, we were like, wait, you listen to that too?
Yeah.
It's good. I listened to it again just to see if it held up. It does. It's still really good. They were just like tapped into something real special on that album.
And speaking of the personal connections, anytime I hear anything from that record, that's a record that definitely fell out of rotation because of overplay during that time period. But
yeah,
anytime I hear anything from that record, I'm like, that was two cars ago. Like, I remember being in a different, which car we had at the time, listening to that record in Winston-Salem.
Yeah.
Two states ago.
Yeah, there's actually, like, going through, I was like, man, there's a lot of really good albums that year. Like, just really fun stuff that I liked quite a bit.
A lot of stuff that everyone liked that we didn't, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the really popular stuff, I did not care about at all.
That, the Parquet Courts record.
Yeah. I just have never cared about Parquet Courts, which sucks, because it's, like, people from bands we do like.
Yeah. It's boring.
Yeah, I tried. I even tried that last record they put out, and it just didn't do anything for me. I don't know. Against Me released Transgender Dysphoria Blues, which is a pretty big record. It's the first album that came out after Laura Jane Grace came out as transgender. So kind of an important album. Like, a really important album in punk. Yeah, that Joyce Manor record, Never Hung Over Again, was like a big deal. We talk about this as like the week on the eve of the new record coming out, which is like got a Sublime parody album title. It's called like 40 Ounces to Torrents or something like that.
Yeah.
Another band that I just like, I don't know. I can't get into them. I'll listen to the new record, but I probably won't get into it. I did like that Warpaint record that came out that year, who they just also released a brand new record. It's probably my favorite Warpaint album. It is also the first one I heard by them.
I'm wondering if there's anything outside of the punk charts that's significant. I don't think there's going to be much that shows up that I listened to then, because I was pretty exclusively into punk and hardcore. There is a good Tom Petty record. Hypnotic Eye was a good one. Oh, right. The Bud album. Yeah.
Gaslight Anthem.
Gaslight Anthem's Get Hurt. Which doesn't show up on the punk charts for whatever goofy reason. This website doesn't.
This website hates tagging anything punk post-2010.
Yeah.
A lot of
nothing significant.
A lot of abusers on this list. It's really shitty.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot of yikes.
Yeah, not that, though.
Yeah.
We should probably get into the album, though, and not reminisce too long on the charts.
Yeah. All right. Well, so 2014, I was going through looking at all these records. And I was like, that'd be cool. Maybe I should pick something I don't know. Maybe I should pick something for a laugh. And I just kept coming back to this album. So I wound up selecting Too Shabby by Roswell Kid. Roswell Kid formed in 2011 in West Virginia, just nebulous West Virginia, no specific city tied to them.
I think that's West Virginia.
Yeah, let's just say Charleston. Released November 14th, 2014. This is the band's third full-length album after 2011's The Roswell Kid LP and 2013's Unmacho. It was released on Broken World Media. Remember Broken World Media?
Broken World.
Yeah.
What did they put out?
So that same year, they put out I Kill Giants, Empire. It was mainly a tape label. Saint Seneca, The World Is. They had a lot of World Is stuff on their label.
Yeah.
There's that John Gulm of Snowing record. There's a Nouns album. There's a Sioux Falls record before they got bigger. There's an Abuser band on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Broken World Media, which apparently I just learned are now defunct as of 2018. They stopped being a label, which is funny because they like had their own fest and everything too. Because I remember being at a bed and breakfast in Asheville, and one of the other people there was like, "Yeah, our kids are at this festival called." I was like, "Oh yeah, which one?" Broken World Festival. I was like, "What is that?" And I looked it up. I was like, "Oh, it's this record label has their own festival." Like, I know a lot of these bands. I'd be hanging out there if I'd... No, I wasn't going to go to wherever it was. Pennsylvania. But yeah. Broken World. Doesn't exist anymore. Apparently, they were really bad about their mail order.
Mm. Yeah. That happens.
The personnel on this album is Jordan Hudkins on guitar and vocals, Adam L. Meisterhans on guitar, Devin Donnelly on bass and vocals, and Sean Halleck on drums. There is some additional guitar work by Andrew LaCara, who was a previous member of the band. So they were a three guitar band at one point. So, but he plays on Weirdo and Armadillo on this album. I think he was on the previous record, so I believe he left the band after this one, or after that one, last album. There, interestingly, are some backing vocals on here by Casey Weissbutch of Diarrhea Planet. And I just learned that he played drums on Bully's 2017 album Losing. It's just a weird little like connection. The album was recorded, mixed, and mastered by Justin Francis in Nashville, which explains the Diarrhea Planet connection because they were a Nashville band. I was looking at this Justin Francis guy's discography, his resume, and most of his work is technical work. He's really only produced like a handful of things, but he's done a lot more technical stuff, engineering, probably mixing. But he's worked on albums from Anti-Flag, as well as our friends in Ed Hockley and Calyx, back before the first, or before the big LP. But he's also, this is the weird shit, he has done technical work on albums by Kenny Chesney and his Puppet Mouth, Kenny Rogers, Fish, Alison Krauss, Orville Peck, Deep Purple, and the Encanto soundtrack. So this dude has done a lot of shit. And then the album cover is by Jordan Hudkins of the band. And there was a deluxe edition of the album with two bonus tracks on Counterintuitive Records in 2020. The songs are from two splits they did. One was a four-way split called Sunday Bloody Sunday, as in Ice Cream Sunday. And then they did a split with The World is a Beautiful Place called 14 Minute Mile. And so it's just the two songs from those. I guess there's just room on the LP, so they threw it on there. But, okay. Those are the big stats. Do you remember the first time you heard Roswell Kid?
Not specifically. I remember seeing them with AJJ. Probably in, like, 2015?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, it had to be 2015.
Yeah, it was AJJ, Jeffrey Lewis, and whatever version of the band he had. And, yeah, Roswell Kid. I don't know if there's a local or not.
There was an opener. There was a local opener.
I don't remember who it was.
I don't think we saw them.
We were late.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I sent you my list of options, and I was like, I'm thinking about that one. And you said, I figured you would. What did you mean by that?
That's a U band. There's not a lot. I mean, once you get outside of punk, there's lots of stuff that you and I have preferences for that the other is not interested in. But within punk, there's not a lot of bands that one of us listens to exclusively over the other. Mm-hmm. This was a band that never clicked for me. Really. I don't know why. I just skipped over them. And then you're like, we should go see Roswell Kid with AJJ. And I'm like, oh, Roswell Kid? Okay, cool. You were like, I really like that record. I'm like, really? I don't think I had listened to it by that point. Yeah, it's a funny one. It was like, oh yeah, that's yours.
Well, you know what? There are a few like that. Gaslight Anthem, they're yours.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not mine. They're yours.
Yeah, that's one of the big ones I was thinking of.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there is a type of band that I like that I don't think you care about. And I also don't know why I like some bands in that. I don't know. I can't. There is like a theatrical type of band or like an over the top type of band that I really like that you don't usually like or care for, but or care about as much as me. But I don't know. It's weird. Interesting.
Theatrical is an interesting way to define it, but I know what you mean.
Over the top. What's a similar? I don't know. There's another way to word that, but
yeah, because over the top, I would think of as like excess, and I don't know that that's how I would describe Roswell Kid.
No, see, I won't necessarily put them in that theatrical category. I was just using that as an example.
I mean, I think it works. There is a certain kind of like, there's a certain kind of performance that they do, and I'm thinking of having seen them live a few times.
Yeah.
And the way their shows, the kind of energy that their shows have, that I do think translates into their records.
Yeah.
That is, it's an act to some extent.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I was trying to figure out when I first heard them. It might have been in 2014. I do distinctly remember not, okay. So I remember going to Fest one year and like seeing some Roswell Kids stuff around, which I thought was weird. The record came out November 14th, so maybe there was vinyl for it at Fest, but like the record technically wasn't out yet. I could see that being the case because it just would have been 14 days later. So, but I remember like shirts. I remember their name kind of popping up a bunch at Fest that year, and I knew nothing about them like at all. I knew nothing. I didn't know what they were. I didn't know what they sounded like. I wasn't even like super like hooked yet as far as visually. I just was like, I've seen that name around. And then a couple songs came out, or people were sharing songs online, like Facebook or Tumblr, probably, because we're still using Tumblr at this point. And I remember listening to them being like, these lyrics are kind of funny. And I'm not a lyrics guy, but this is a lyrics band, kind of. They're two things. The lyrics really come through on the album. And I remember hearing a couple of songs being like, I like this, and then listening to the album. Maybe the album wasn't even out yet, and I just listened to it when it finally came out later in November, and I was like, whoa, this is good. I like this a lot. The lyrics were the main reason I think I got hooked right away. But, yeah, that was one of those bands where it's like I came home from Fest and then started looking for the band later, or hearing it later, which is a thing that doesn't happen as much as it used to. Caves were that band one year. Chumped was that band another year.
Yeah. We actually skipped over that on the charts because that record came out in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the, like, they were that, I feel like they were that band the year before, but then that record came out, mm-hmm. and then no one cared. They didn't do what they were expected to do.
Yeah, and they broke
commercially.
Up.
Commercially.
That might have been even, because that record came out and then they broke up that year.
Yeah.
Too, I think. It was like, wow, the album just came out and you're already done? Which must have been, like, inter-band conflict or something. Because, like, some of the members would go play with in Katie Ellen, but not all of them. And others would start their own bands that weren't as good.
Looks
Kid, Roswell Kid became, they have developed, I get the feeling that they have developed a kind of, not a big audience, but a faithful audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little niche, but they seem to do well. They seem to maintain the size of their audience.
Yeah, which is not what a band wants. You want to get bigger, not like, oh, wow, we kept the same cluster of fans going forward.
I mean, I think if you want to have longevity and to not feel like you peaked at some point and then have slipped down, I don't think it's a terrible thing to aim for a really consistent audience.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Lucero.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same size audience as it always has been.
Yeah.
And they tour.
You know, so there's a part of me, too, that's just like, is Roswell Kid are kind of one of those bands that, like, stopped, but didn't really stop. Like, they just, the last thing they put out was, though, in 2017. Well, no, that's not true. We'll get to that in a minute. But, like, the last, like, regular Roswell Kid thing was Precious Heart in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know COVID kind of fucks with everything in a timeline, so it makes things seem like they're, it's like, wow, there's a huge gap between releases there, and it's like, yeah, because there wasn't, not everybody wanted to write a record over the last 2 years. And so I'm like, did Roswell Kid break up? But then I saw they have, like, shows, like, this summer. I don't think they've been doing, like, extensive touring, but that could just be COVID stuff. They did put out, in 2020, they put out Dreamboats 2, a real chill sequel, which is a collaborative, like, acoustic thing between Jordan of Roswell Kid and then this band called Sleeping Bag. So those aren't, like, proper Roswell Kid releases. There's two of those. And so that was the 2020 thing they put out, but it's weird. I feel like they lost momentum, maybe? Does that make sense? Does it feel like they were a momentum-lost band?
I feel like they could put out a record this year and people would be like, oh, hell yeah, a new Roswell Kid record. And I think that they would go on tour and have the same audience participation that they had in 2017.
Yeah.
They just seem like a band that can easily pick back up wherever.
Yeah. Well, like, so Too Shabby.
Because, I mean, my going back to my point on, like, their live show being a kind of performance, like, they're really tight. They're really good musicians. They have such a, like, I would say it's a fairly scripted show. It has that feeling to it, you know, where it's just like, these are the ritual things that we do with each song. I mean, they do the rope them up thing or whatever.
The what?
They do the, like, their swinging lasses over their head thing. I mean, like, everyone in the audience does it. I don't know. They have those things that they do that are, like, audience engagement that they, like, consistently do when they play live. Well, I think that they can do that. I think they can just walk into any room and pick up.
Live, they're a three guitar band. And so, like, a triple guitar band is always really fun to watch because then the type of music they're playing, too, they do a lot of the back-to-back guitar solo, like, you know, the leads, like, you're lifting your guitar up to play, like, a lot of that kind of, like, show-offy rock and roll guitar type playing. So I can see, yeah, that's, it does seem kind of like, and this is the part where we go back-to-back, you know, like,
yeah, where we do the swinging, we do the ZZ Top moves.
But I do remember, too, we saw them at Fest. It was probably the year Superchunk played, but it was, like, at the Bo Diddley Arena. It was outside. It was night. And when they got to the song Michael Keaton, they told everybody to pull up a specific picture of Beetlejuice on their phone and then hold it up for the entirety of the song. And then, like, everyone held it up the whole song. Like, everyone who held their phone up held it up the whole time. The same picture of Beetlejuice. And then at the end of the song, he just was just laughing at the idea. He's like, look at all of them. They're all still up. Everyone held it up the whole time. Like, just this, like, funny thing. Because he was even laughing about it. He's like, I can't believe everyone did that. Which, Fest is probably the perfect audience for them.
Yeah.
So, musically, what'd you think of it?
I don't get into a lot of Weezer punk,
mm-hmm.
Which is definitely where I would land this. That being said, I did love the Super Weeks. I think that is probably why Roswell Kid didn't become a band for me, is that I have one slot available for a Weezer punk band, and the Super Weeks took it. But it's fun. It's enjoyable. There's good guitar parts. The lyrics are, they'll jump out at you, and they're funny, and they're like kind of like silly slacker rock kind of lyrics that are interesting.
Yeah, they're funny lyrics that aren't joke songs, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a fine line. Like, you can be funny in a song, but it can't just be like, the Tenacious D. Like, that kind of... Or yeah. Even Weird Al. Like, Weird Al's enjoyable, but part of it's because he's doing it to songs that you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just funny lines more than anything. Like, Fiver and Frenzy has funny lines in songs, and that's why I've always liked that type of humor in music. The album starts off with the lyric, Simpsons Season 3 on DVD.
Yeah.
And A Thing of Hummus. And it's just a song about how simple. It's a slacker rock anthem, really. It's like, you know, talking about how, like, I could go to the opera, but that's just not me. Like, that's the idea of that song. That's the opening track, Kangaroo Pocket, which they made a music video for, which is funny because it's the band playing, but their heads are all chopped off like the album cover. And then, like, his disembodied head is singing on a couch for a good chunk of it. Low budget green screen video. But then, like, even the song Halloween 3.5, which is probably my favorite song on the album, the line about I tried to dress up like the crow for Halloween, but my makeup sucked. It was the worst you'd ever seen. Like, just that line was so good. I play that song on Halloween all the time.
That one's got a great hook.
Yeah.
That's definitely one of the standout tracks on the record to me. That and Birthday Sombrero is pretty big.
Mm-hmm. Sick Jackets is really good. Because We Got Sick Jackets, which they did a video for that one too. There are some moments though where it's just like, I like Weirdo. Weirdo's got a really good chorus. Creeped Out has like a very Weezer Beverly Hills type riff to it, but it's way better than Beverly Hills because that song sucks. Armadillo has a really good solo, like really good guitar work on there. Lots of ooze, just ooze all over this record. Really good harmony parts and really fun guitar work. I think it's just a really fun record, and I think that's why I really connected to it. It's a combination of fun lyrics, fun guitar playing, and fun choruses that it was just like, I'm down for this.
Yeah, there's really only one song that loses me, Droner, the 6 minute.
Yeah.
Which is them doing more of the 90s indie rock.
Yeah, Droner is probably my least favorite song on the album. And Bangs, which is the third track. I told you.
Fourth track.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Sick Jackets is third.
Sick Jackets is third, yeah. Bangs is fourth. And that one's slow, and it's just not a super memorable song to me. But it's shorter than Droner. Droner is my least favorite because it's so long. Bangs is probably my second least favorite. But, like, yeah, I don't know. I like just about everything on here, though, besides that. Like, Smear Me is great. Creeped Out's good. Armadillo. Birthday Sombrero. Like, some of these songs, it's only 10 tracks, too, which was smart. Short record. Standout moments. Standout tracks.
It is kind of the exact agreed-upon alternative rock punk record length. It's 35 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's...
It's the set length.
Yeah. That's true. That is... Is that why I like 35-minute records more than anything?
I mean, it would be if you add in between guitar tuning, bantering time. It's the set length. You add your 10 minutes on, get your 45 minutes. But
yeah,
so you could play the whole record at your show.
Yeah, but probably not. You probably wouldn't play the two slow songs at your show.
Yeah, well, and you're gonna have other songs in your catalog anyway. But
yeah. Your mind, it always third record, which for a band like I'd never even heard of before that year is funny. It's just like weird that like I didn't know anything about those other albums. I remember listening to them at the time being like, they're okay. Not as good as this one. And so I revisited a couple tracks from the first two records just to see what they were like. And the very first record was already like, they had the songs down. Like, they were definitely doing Roswell Kid on that first record. They just didn't have their tone yet. They hadn't figured that part out yet. But they had the song structure. And then Unmacho has, they're getting there. Like, they've started to figure out the tone. But that one also doesn't have the hooks either. So, I think Too Shabby is like, wow, they perfected this sound altogether. Which it sounds really good. The production's great on this album. There's a lot of low end on there too, like very distorted, dirty bass tone.
Yeah, it does a good job of being kind of like a jokey, throwbacky rock record, but also being a good rock record. You know, yeah. Like it really does have enough punch to it, and it's not all like hee hee tee hee.
Yeah.
You know, it's clear that they really do enjoy the music that they're drawing on for influence.
Yeah, I mean, Weezer is probably, like, the most obvious influence. And I even read an interview he did where he was talking about, yeah, I think one of the best songs ever was, like, a Weezer song specifically. I didn't recognize the song title, but... So, like, yeah, the Weezer rock thing is there. But I also think Weezer rock bands are better than most Weezer albums.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, people took that idea and, like almost everyone who's tried to do it has done it better than Weezer.
Yeah. I love the Blue Album. People love Pinkerton. I don't. And I think you're on the camp of Blue Album's got some songs.
It's about half good. Half good.
But, like, anything else I've ever heard by them, I'm like, what is this? That's is terrible. Why do they keep putting out records? They're so bad.
Roswell Kid, though, they do remind me a little bit of Piebald.
I have that as a note as well. Like, to me, it's like Little Weezer, Little Piebald, Little Thin Lizzy solos, and maybe even a little like Hard Girls. Hard Girls kind of are in that same lane, but a little different too. But Hard Girls get a little weirder.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely some piebaldness to them. And even like, I don't know, even just seeing them and it's like, oh yeah, these are Slacker Rock guys. Like, it just... They look like Slacker Rock guys. The lyrics are about that. I do wonder what they do. Because clearly Roswell Kid's not their full-time gigs. So they're like, I just want to know what they do. What's their day jobs, you know?
Probably not anything interesting if it allows them to go on tour.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about, like, their personal lives. I mean, I'm sure if you did an interview with them, they'd tell you. But they've done podcasts, too. I guess, like... Could have listened to those, but actually listening to other podcasts for research is pretty hard and time consuming. The album cover was actually by Jordan. It's a great album cover. Really good, just distinct design of a head of a person with their head chopped off, but like cartoony.
Yeah, the Hawaiian shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee cup. It's a really good drawing.
Yeah. And I think he's done a lot of their covers, but I think this is the best one.
He did the, yeah, he definitely did the, Precious Art cover.
Yeah. And I think he did the 14 Minute Mile cover, and which Unmacho has the chopped up body imagery too. It's a photo. It's a drummer and his arms are like chopped off. But yeah, I think he did the other Sunday Bloody Sunday cover. He did a lot of his own art. He hasn't done a ton of other people's art though. Oh wow. The 14 Minute Mile has someone with a bloody head too. They have a theme going on. With a lot of their artwork here. Good Graphics was an EP that they did on cassette that was really good. And I remember being like, they put that on 2015 and it was like right after Too Shabby had come out. And I was like, all right. And then they signed with Sidewood and Dummy. And then it was like 2017 before Precious Art came out. It's like they took too long between Good Graphics and Precious Art. It's 2 years. And like, that's why I've always been like, oh yeah, they lost momentum. But also maybe they just had day jobs and they couldn't do it full time. They got a lot of like South by Southwest press, like Fuse called them like with one of the bands to watch out for that year, South by Southwest, and like they talked about how much they hated how stressful South by Southwest was to do, just because like you had nowhere to park I remember they made like a video of them just driving their van looking for a parking space from like above.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I made Dylan listen to a record he doesn't like.
I like it, but it, yeah, it doesn't, it still doesn't click. I think I get it more now, but it still isn't like, I'm going to reach for that one. I don't know. They definitely have strong songs, though. There's definitely some good ones.
Yeah. I think it's their best record. The Good Graphics is really good, too. It's short. It's like 5 songs or something like that, so they kind of trim the fat on that one. Precious Art's good, but it doesn't have as many standout tracks to me. Like, Wendy's Trash Can is the main one I think of. And Michael Keaton. So, they're considered power pop. Do you think they have any other influences besides Weezer, though, that make them power pop?
I mean, I think they're definitely carrying on that Weezer Does Cheap Trick. Yeah, I mean, Thin Lizzy influenced pop rock, I feel like, is kind of definitively power pop. Like, I don't get the Big Star or Teenage Fan Club flavor of power pop, in there as much as the twin guitars and chunky riffs, kind of power pop. But this is definitely one of those records that I would undisputably call power pop. Like, people wanting to call everything with chunky guitars and hooks power pop, like, they're not wrong on this one. That's definitely what it is.
Yeah.
It has that 70s swagger to the riffs.
Yeah.
That really makes it.
I think they beat a lot of bands to the power pop sound, too, within the scene that they're part of. Because they were part of the emo scene, but they weren't really doing emo. Like, they're doing, like, an emo in, you know, power pop with emo influences, but they weren't, like, the regular emo bands that were coming in. Like, they weren't the Hotelier who were doing stuff the same year, you know?
No.
And I actually just tried to pull up power pop for that year, and I get a Weezer record. And then, like, there's an XHEX record, Rips, which that's, like, specifically going for, like, the Cars 70s power pop sound.
I do get a little bit of the Cars influence too.
Yeah.
On the hooks, which is, again, I mean, that's, it's the Cars and Cheap Trick, which are the formula for Weezer. So it kind of does come back to Weezer.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think they were kind of ahead of the game, though, as far as, because even the Weeks in 2014 were, I'd say they were probably more emo than power pop on that EP. But then they would get there with the first full length.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a strong power pop year, though.
Is there a big 2015 We Cool, Jeff Rosenstock?
Is that it?
That's, yeah. It's all of the new wave of power pop. It's Jeff Rosenstock. It's Antarctica Vespucci. It's people wanting to call the Sidekicks power pop. Dogs on Acid.
There's an Antarctica Vespucci record in 2014, too, but it's not the one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you get some rumblings underneath. Like, there's that Museum Mouth record, Alex, I Am Nothing. And then there's, like, who else? I saw another one. Hurry put one out, Everything Nothing. It's, like, bands who would become bigger in that sound later. Yeah. So it was bubbling, but it hadn't quite crossed over yet.
Yeah, 2015 is the starting to call everything power pop.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Front Bottoms, Pet Sematary. Like, Pet Sematary was emo.
Yeah. Well, I think we've said everything there is to say about this record. I really liked it. I think it holds up. I think it still works really well. I was nervous going into it. I was like, am I not going to like this as much? But I still liked it pretty good. So, besides those two, like, super-duper slow tracks, I liked everything else on here. So, fun band. I want to see them live again. I hope they put something new out soon. You know, they're doing a little tour right now, so I'm hoping that turns into either a bigger tour or like an actual record soon. So, but
yeah, I mean, I've seen them twice, despite never really listening to them. If I was at Fest and they were playing and you were like, let's watch Roswell Kid, and there wasn't something else that I wanted to see, I would watch them again and enjoy it.
I'm pretty sure you've only ever gone and seen something I didn't see once at Fest, ever.
Yeah, there's probably like, yeah.
I can't even think of who it would have been. Did you see Sleepy Time Trio?
Yeah, I saw Sleepy Time Trio.
That's probably the only time that's ever happened where I was.
Well, like, and yeah, being convinced to go watch The Lawrence Arms
instead of Lucero.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But yeah, otherwise we've pretty much stuck together.
Because even if there was something you wanted to see, I'd just go with you. And like yeah. Nothing I wanted to see. But yeah. Well, all right. I think that'll do it for this week's episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And hopefully you enjoyed this episode. Give us a rating. We haven't had any new ratings or reviews on iTunes in a long time. It's a little stale. Let's boost up. Let's kick out some of those early negative reviews because they didn't understand the premise of the show. Make our average a little nicer. But I think that will do us for the show. Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next week.